Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed-up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed-up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, what's going on?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. I'm so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot.
This episode 367.
What? Lynn, that's quite impressive. 367. We should probably do a little review.
Yeah, for sure. Ken and I are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we talk Disneyland. We do this episode every other week, and we talk about Disneyland history. We have former cast members on, Imagineers, authors, and talk Disneyland history. And then on alternate weeks, we have our current events, which we talk about the latest and greatest in the Disneyland news, Disneyland Resort news. And and we're also authors of the books Queening the Kingdom, and we have two volumes out. You can get both of those paperback on our website at thesweepspot.com, and they're autographed by both of us. If you don't care about the autographs, you can get them on Amazon. Both copies there. You can also get digital copies through like Kindle and Apple Books, and you can get the audiobooks where audiobooks are found. Also, if you'd like to help support our show, you can become a Patreon and help us. It really helps us pay the bills and do what we need to do to keep bringing this show to you. And also, you get some great perks. You get to join us once a month as we record our current events. If you get to chime in and leave a comment and be a part, and we'll sometimes add your comment into the show. So it's a lot of fun. And also, you get one bonus episode delivered to you. That's an episode that Ken and I record specifically just for the Patreons. And speaking of Patreons, we have a new Patreon. It's Michael Corbett.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And if you'd like to join and become a patron, you can go to patreon.com and search the Sweep Spot, or you can go to thesweepspot.com and click on the Patreon link there. For $5 or more a month, you get those great perks I just mentioned. But if you don't care too much about the perks, but you still want to help us, even $1 would help us. We have a lot of people that contribute just $1, and that's great. So really appreciate any help we can get. Ken, what are we doing this episode?
Well, this episode, we figured we would actually do some review, some just kind of go over some basics about Disneyland, and also introduce ourselves. because we talk week after week as if everybody knows exactly what we're talking about.
And if
somebody's kind of a newer listener, or maybe they're not so familiar with Disneyland yet, and they're trying to learn about it, we wanted to kind of give them an introductory overview. And now, if you're one of our regular listeners, we think you're still going to enjoy this. So you might chuckle at us. You might say, no, you got it all wrong. But if you do want to correct us on something, go ahead and write to us. But I think we get it all right. We just kind of want to give an overview of Disneyland, its history, very, very brief overview of the history, and kind of explain, you know, why and what. So that if you're kind of newer to Disneyland or this podcast, that you would get a better understanding.
Yeah, I'm excited to do this. This is, like I said, this is kind of what the show was founded on, was Disneyland history. So I'm excited to get back into that. Let's do it.
Looking to book a vacation to Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World Resort, Disney Cruise Line, Disney Alani, Disneyland Paris, Adventures by Disney, Universal Studios Hollywood, Universal Studios Orlando, then I can do that for you. If you contact me and we can talk about all the different options and dates, and we can kind of even make recommendations on which days might be the best for you to go. And also, as a complimentary, when you book with us, we will book your dining for you if you'd like, special events. And we also, when we book a vacation for you, we just don't say have a good time after we book it for you. We are there every step of the way. We contact you before your trip to make sure everything's squared away. We even have a checklist to make sure that you have everything you need. Reservations, dining, all these different things. Your transportation, if you need help with that from the airport. Any of those sort of things, we can help you with that too. We want to make the vacation the best it can be for you, because I know that vacations aren't cheap, and we can help you do that. So if you contact me, that's Lynn, and the email is lbarron@concierge.com. That's LBARRON at concierge.com. Or you can go to...
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
TheSweepSpot.com, and there's a link on our front page there. You can click on that, and there's information on how to contact me. But I'd love to talk to you and help you book the best vacation possible.
And now... Walt Disney will step forward to read the dedication of Disneyland.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past. And here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.
There are several ways to get up a mountain and down again. One of the most exciting routes is about to be officially opened here at the Swiss Chalet loading station. And here's a bobsled starting its run.
The dedication of New Orleans Square It's been underway for some time. I think a lot of you folks that have been to Disneyland in the last 2 or 3 years have probably noticed this big hole out here that wasn't filled up. Well, we finally got it filled up. And that big hole is now New Orleans Square.
Earthman has long dreamed of exploring the mysteries of our galaxy and the infinite wonders of the universe beyond. You will experience these wonders on your own space journey when Disneyland's spectacular super thrill attraction, Space Mountain, opens.
A short time from now, in a kingdom very, very near.
Artu, do hurry. The passengers are boarding.
Prepare yourselves.
Welcome aboard.
For the ultimate Disneyland thrill attraction from the imagination of Disney and George Lucas. Because now, the adventure is real. Star Tours at Disneyland.
Invited to our 50th anniversary celebration at the happiest place on earth, the Disneyland Resort. For a vacation you and your family will never forget. Disney's West Coast experience is totally unique. It's the place where Disney theme park magic all began. Walt's California dream has grown over the years with 2 theme parks, 3 hotels, exciting shopping, and a wide variety of entertainment choices.
So on this episode, I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of do a refresher of Disneyland history, just some of the key moments in the history, and kind of a back to the basics of Disneyland history. And along with that, thought it'd be a good reminder for people that maybe aren't familiar with Disneyland, maybe they're Walt Disney World, you know, people that go there more often, or not even go to a Disney park, but they just enjoy listening to our show. This kind of give you a basic background of Disneyland. And I hope that you learned something, even if it's for the regulars of our show, that maybe know a lot of history, maybe even more than we know, that you'll learn something from this also.
Yeah. And you know, if you think we missed something important, you can always write in and tell us. But wanted to just kind of give a basic look at Disneyland so that people who maybe want to get into it more can. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, our shows are just often assume that people already know all these things we're going to talk about. And you know, we might quite possibly be getting new listeners at different times. So mm-hmm. we want to make sure that they're kind of not left behind.
Right. And I know we're not going to hit every moment. We couldn't do this all in, you know, under an hour. So these are just key moments that we think are important. But of course, there might be some really big ones that we're missing. So
yeah.
Before we get into that, I thought we'd do just a small review on us and our background real quick. Ken, if you wanted to go ahead.
Sure. I live in Anaheim, which is where Disneyland is located, and I grew up about 45 minutes away from the resort, from Disneyland. Went frequently as a child, maybe, you know, once a year or whatever. That considered that frequent, until we got annual passes when I was a teenager or 12 years older, right around there. Had annual passes for about 5 years, then I started working there when I was about 17 years old. And that was in 1990. Got a job at Disneyland in custodial, sweeping. And that's where I met Lynn. But I stayed there until 2005. So I was there for 15 years. The last five of it, though, I was back to just kind of part-time because I had another job. And that's when I eventually quit because I couldn't do both anymore. So now I have a job that has nothing to do with Disney. but I still remain a fan of Disneyland. I mean, in fact, when I had gotten the job there, I kind of wanted to get into theme park design. And I thought I was going to be a Walt Disney Imagineer and all that sort of thing. And since then, kept up with it. And Lynn and I have co-authored two books about our time there and other people's experiences there, kind of explaining what we did and what custodial does and all the fun we had along the way. So now, Lynn, let's introduce people to you.
So I also grew up in Southern California and used to go there about once a year with our family. And then as I became a teenager, I had an annual pass and used to go a little more often, maybe like on the weekends or Friday night or something. And then I had my first job there. My first time there was in 1991 at the Plaza Inn, the Plaza Complex. And then I left there in 93. And then I was an annual pass holder after that for a little bit longer. And then I went back and started working in 1998 in Custodio. And again, that's where I met Ken. And I stayed there in Custodio until 2007 when I moved to Utah, where I live now. And probably 4 years later, I started the podcast. I was kind of missing Disneyland and just being around it. I wanted to talk about it more, and I was getting more into the history of it. I mean, I already kind of had been, but I wanted to get more into it. And that's when I started listening to podcasts, and I started this podcast in 2011, or as March of 2011. So it's been 12 years now. And so, we've done the books, as Ken mentioned, and we've met a lot of people through the books, a lot of other podcasts and other former cast members. It's kind of just helped us meet more people to be able to do some of the interviews that you hear on our show, just by being in this, I guess you can call it community, of Disney fans. So that's kind of the basics with me, but, let's, dive right into this. So Ken, why don't I'll kind of throw it over to you for this, but where did the idea for Disneyland come about and all of that?
Well, and why Disneyland, Disney? Well, yeah. Disneyland was something that percolated in the mind of Walt Disney for many years, and he kind of collected his experiences at other venues. And, you know, the official version that you kind of get from the company was that, you know, he had a couple of daughters, and he would take them to Griffith Park in Los Angeles when they were young, and they would ride, you know, the merry-go-round or whatever. And he would think, well, gee, there really should be something that like the entire family could do together, some sort of amusement enterprise that's, you know, not run down, you know, disjointed, but organized and clean and something for the whole family. So he just kind of, he kept taking notes wherever he went, you know, museums and gardens and amusement venues and things like that. You have to remember, he was born, Walt Disney was born in December of 1901. So, you know, he started his studio in 1923 with his brother. And then over the years, they're making movies and eventually they're going to get into television. And that's, you know, we won't go into detail on that, but that's all getting into television was intertwined with the creation of Disneyland. Mm-hmm. That has been talked about on certain episodes of the podcast. It was a big deal for movie studio to get involved in TV because most movie studios at the time saw TV as the enemy, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he finally was able to create Disneyland, but he needed the help of a lot of people to do it. And so in the early 1950s, those things started to coalesce. Lynn's going to mention a couple of things about that.
Well, one of the things that he was a big train lover. He'd grown up in the Midwest and near where trains go through. And he had a uncle that worked on the trains. And so he was around trains a lot. If anyone lives in the Midwest or has been back there a lot often, there's a lot more, because my cousins in Oklahoma live in a small town and the train is always going through there and you can hear it all over the town. So I can only imagine his town was similar to that. So he's always around trains. It was kind of a big influence on him. And, to make it short, he had a train track designed into his backyard at his house.
And this was a smaller scale, right?
Yeah, like one of those, you kind of straddle it.
Yeah,
you know, the train.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not sitting inside of it, you're sitting on it.
Yeah, it was still a steam train. And he had a lot of fun with that. The neighbors would come over and family and stuff. But he wanted something bigger in a place that was bigger to have a bigger train. And yeah. I always think that he, you know, Disneyland was built because he just wanted a bigger place to play, you know, to put put his train in.
It's a giant model railroad set. Mm-hmm. And that's one way of looking at Disneyland.
Right. I mean, now people take, you know, amusement parks or theme parks, I should say, were granted and just, you know, think they've always kind of been around and Disneyland's, you know, similar to the others, but different in some other ways. But really, they were the first ones to to be that way, to be the as themed as it is. And,
master planned from the start. It didn't grow from Knott's Berry Farm grew from a roadside berry stand at a farm, mm-hmm. and they just kept growing and growing. It wasn't planned out,
no,
you know. whereas Disneyland was master planned.
Oh yeah, and because he needed a place to build it, he first had an idea to build it across from the studios, the Walt Disney Studios, where they did all their animation and live action. Not really yet at that moment, but mostly animation at that time. And there was a plot of land across the way, but I don't remember how many acres it was. But it was not nearly as big as what he would really want. But it was kind of a blessing that it didn't work out because the city of Burbank was not okay with him doing that. Because, like we had said, the idea of a theme park. Well, the word theme park wasn't around then, but it was amusement park kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They did not want that because amusement parks brought, you know, drinking and just.
Oh, yeah. They were thinking of carnivals. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really thinking mm-hmm. of carnivals with, you know, questionable staff and rowdy groups and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah.
And they didn't want that in Burbank. And I mean, if they had known later what Disneyland was going to be like, they would have said, "Have a bigger piece of land." But I don't know. It worked out for best because then, he had Bud Price kind of had
Harrison Buzz Price.
Buzz Price. Kind of helped with finding the perfect place. And there was other ideas around the Southern California area. But at that moment, Orange County was not, there was not much going on. It was a lot of farm, and yes, it was kind of spread out as far as where houses were. But they were building this freeway, Highway 5, through that direction. And I think that Buzz kind of had an idea that this, with having a highway right near there, that this would be a good place and that the growth would be happening in Orange County later.
Mm-hmm.
So Walt had all these ideas and everything, and he, you know, more happened in between all that, but he had to have money to make this happen, and in order to get extra money to do this, he needed to borrow money from banks, and in order to do that, he had to have something to show the banks, like, this is what we're planning on building. You can't just tell them we're going to build this great park, and they, because no one really can envision that sort of thing as what he was coming up with. So he had one of his artists, Herb Ryman, you know, there's the famous story that he called him and, you know, said, I really need you to help me, or I need, you know, started telling him about Disney. Oh, it sounds great. I'd love to see it sometime, you know. And he,
yeah,
he said, well, you're going to help me design it. So it was really all, so the way Disneyland shaped and the way it is today was all because of that weekend with them brainstorming and Herb Ryman putting down on paper kind of an outline. It changed some over the, if you look at that, it's everywhere online, but if you look at what he originally, they had had, I think Adventureland was on like where Tomorrowland is, and things were a little bit different, but
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but for the most part it was all kind of right there. And so he had, you know, drew this up over a weekend with Walt, and Roy took it off to New York, and
his brother Roy, yeah.
Roy Disney, which was another, he was a key part in all of this also, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So from the very beginning of the Disney, you know, company. So they, you know, he took the maps there and with, you know, description and everything, and was able to get the money, and they started construction in Anaheim in June of 1954, and the park opened a year, almost, you know, a year later, which is crazy. You know, now I know that they were really pushing, and he wanted to have it on that date. You know, he didn't want to push it back farther and farther. And there was a lot of challenges along the way that you've, you know, we could talk all about, but
it was brilliant because he made one of the deals he made, you know, there were multiple deals to get this built. And one of them was with the ABC television network, which the idea was, they said, okay, you're going to produce, part of the deal was Walt Disney's going to do a weekly TV show for us. And he used that TV show to market Disneyland to the American public.
So smart.
Yeah. Just kind of previewing what Disneyland was going to be and getting people excited about it. And what, nowadays they cite July 17th, 1955 as the opening, right? Mm-hmm. But that was the big, for years, it was the next day, July 18th, which July 18th is the first day the general public could get in.
Right.
But July 17th, 1955 was this big TV broadcast hosted by Walt Disney and Ronald Reagan and Art Linkletter and Bob Cummings and
A lot of celebrities.
Had invited celebrities, you know, people from the studio invited, gate crashers were there. but, you know, it was this big TV event, and that they were off and running. You know?
Well, it didn't go as smooth as they maybe had planned. There was a couple obstacles in the way with strikes, for a plumber strike, and you kind of had to decide on what he needed to have. You know, you've heard all the story, you know, restrooms or drinking fountains. And
yeah,
so he opted for restrooms, obviously. And they ran out of, you know, food, and there was a gas break, and just a lot of the concrete had literally been poured the night before and in some areas. And
yeah,
so yeah, it wasn't the smoothest opening, but it opened.
And there were a lot of things that weren't going to be open right away. You know, that's mm-hmm. There a lot of stuff was not there July 18th, 1955. Some stuff opened up weeks later, months later. They started adding a lot of stuff. And part of it, though, was they, it seems hard to believe now if you go to a Disney venue, because Disney likes control. But at the time, you know, most of the shops and restaurants were run by other businesses. These were people who had deals to operate their businesses within Disneyland. Because of course this was a whole new, you know, the Disney's experience was movies, you know, animation. Yeah. You know, it wasn't operating a venue where you've got thousands of people interacting with you. So it was a difficult start, but they were off and running. And I wanted to point out, because if you're kind of new to these things, you might get these things confused, and it happens all the time. I see it with news articles and stuff like that, where they use the wrong imagery. Disneyland is the original. It's the one that's in California, Anaheim, California. This is the one that we're talking about. Opened up in 1955. Once this proved to be successful, the company went ahead and developed Walt Disney World in near Orlando, Florida. And that originally opened up in 1971. And everyone just shortens that to Disney World. But Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom was the first park over there. They have four theme parks at the resort now. But the Magic Kingdom is the one that's very much like Disneyland. But so that's the difference, okay?
Yeah, Disneyland was called the Magic Kingdom at one point.
A lot of people still do call it the Magic Kingdom. Yeah. You know, but that's, I wanted to kind of clear that up, because people, you know, Disney World, Disneyland, what's the difference, you know? And it's like Walt Disney World is the one in Florida that's got, you know, the Magic Kingdom and three other major theme parks and all that stuff. And there's, of course, you know, subsequently there's Tokyo Disneyland and Disneyland Paris. But, you know, we're talking about the original, the one that started it all, opened up in 1955 in Anaheim, California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like you had mentioned, a lot of things opened, little things had opened a couple years after the opening of Disneyland. But I think, and a lot of people consider this the next big thing in Disneyland history, was 1959. And that was an expansion that had the opening of three attractions that are still there today. Incredible. Big attractions. Yeah.
It's incredible. They're still there.
Yeah. They're intertwined kind of with each other in that. Well, they are in Tomorrowland. And Fantasyland right there on the edge, and that is the Matterhorn bobsleds, the submarine voyage, and the monorail. And when the monorail first opened, it was didn't go to the hotel. The hotel was didn't go there yet. It was just kind of went around Tomorrowland a little bit, and then
it was a ride rather than transporting you somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a huge success, and the Matterhorn being the, is it still considered the first steel?
Tubular steel. That's what Disney says.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, sometimes Disney means, in the really, really fine print, when they say it's the first whatever, they really mean the first one for us. But, right. I wanted to just briefly point out, being master planned, Disney had Disneyland had one entrance. Okay, it's kind of acting like a funnel. It had it had a berm that the train was on around, you know, trying to delineate the inside of the park from the outside world. You know, and then you go into that funnel, which is Main Street. And then straight ahead is the castle, which is, you know, that iconic castle that's meant to draw you down Main Street. And of course, Main Street represents Walt Disney's boyhood home. It's an idealized version of a Midwestern Main Street from turn of the century, like around 1900. And then, of course, you have the lands were the movie genres that were popular at the time. You had Adventureland, which was, you know, tropical and jungle. Like, you had Frontierland for like the Westerns. Behind the castle was Fantasyland, which featured, you know, some of Disney's animated classics. And then, of course, you have Tomorrowland, which is, you know, based science fiction type thing. So Matterhorn, monorail, and submarines right over there where Fantasyland and Tomorrowland meet. And then the submarine, I mean, think about how ambitious that was, the submarine voyage.
And we had had many, you know, three or four times on our show, a key person in the design of these three attractions. That was Bob Kerr. You've heard his name around in the Disney. If you've listened to other podcasts, I'm sure you've heard his name at some point. But yeah, he was very much a big part of the subs, the monorail, and the Matterhorn design. And that kind of leads us right into the next. I mean, I might be missing something, but I think it's the next bigger thing that kind of led to a lot of other, the way that things run in a theme park, vehicle wise. And that was the 1964-65 World's Fair.
Which was where?
In New York. And Disney was asked, I think they were asked to create some things, and then they kind of ended up making four attractions.
I mean, we could go in. We could talk a long time about that. It's a very, very pivotal event, but, you know, we'll just try to make it as simple as possible.
Yeah, you could do a whole episode on New York World's Fair. So in that, you know, we can mention real quick was Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. The It's a Small World. That was the last one added. It was kind of a last minute kind of one that they had added. What was the I'm drawing a blank now. The
there was the Ford Magic Skyway.
Yes. Yeah, the Ford, which kind of was the development of the guess you could say Omni Mover, but it didn't move the way that a chain of vehicles would move through an attraction.
It kind of led to the People Mover.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And also the Carousel of Progress.
Carousel of Progress, a big part of audio animatronics, which also was Mr. Lincoln. But that was a big advancement in the way that things were made, creating these, animated figures that would move and speak. And that was the audio animatronics. And this is the first, like, big show, Carousel of Progress, that you see in this. Of course, it was Tiki Room, opened in the parks in 63, I believe. But yeah. But it was all kind of in that same era. It was when they created a lot of these things.
There was a lot going on.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they did bring some of that back to Disneyland. A lot of it, actually. And but I did want to mention that. So that was 64-65. And unfortunately, in 1966, had an event that changed a lot of the way that things went, and that was the death of Walt Disney in December of 66. But before he had passed away, they had a whole bunch of things lined up that they were working on. The two main things that they were working on was the Pirates of Caribbean attraction, and then the new Tomorrowland, which would later open in 1967. But before that, though, because a lot of people think that New Orleans Square was like an opening, you know, because this is pretty old, but an opening day. And Ken had kind of mentioned the four lands, but New Orleans did just the area did open, and Walt was still alive for the opening of that area there. But yeah,
yeah, I mean, constantly expanding and improving the park. I mean, yeah. that was an expansion.
So, right. And it kind of, you know, we can go just talking about the death of Walt Disney as a whole episode, but it was very pivotal to the history because of the direction that they ended up going. But they did open up later, in 67, they did open the Pirates of Caribbean, which was a huge hit, and the new Tomorrowland at that time, because Tomorrowland, when it opened in 55, was the last, kind of the last thing that they were working on. Kind of, you know, wasn't really the fully what Walt had envisioned, because he kind of had run out of money.
Ran out of time and money. Yeah.
Yeah. So 67 Tomorrowland is probably one of my favorite versions, maybe, of it, because of the design and the look of it, and this, the, some of the attractions, you know, you had the famous, you know, everyone, it's a Disneyland fan, has heard of the People Mover, and everyone wanting it to come back. But, but yeah, the People Mover is part of that. And that's where they put the rockets up on top of the People Mover. So it's up higher.
And well, describe the rockets.
Oh, the rockets? Oh, they're just like a circular spinning ride.
It's a spinning. And that's the thing, if you've never been, you know, maybe you've seen stuff online, but if you've never been, Disney parks, unlike most amusement parks, Disney parks don't just have rides for the sake of a ride. It has to be themed. It has to be part of the overall story. That word has to be themed. So the rockets, you know, it's called a spinner. You know, it's a spinner. You're in these little rocket-like vehicles, and you spin around in a circle, and you can lift the lever and go up and, you know, or down or whatever. But, you know, the centerpiece looked like, you know, one of the rockets that were getting launched into space. And then it was put up on top of this structure. So it's pretty high up. You know, that's just an example of, there's a similar attraction, Dumbo's Flying Elephants. That's, you know, but that's on the ground. But again, it's, you know, you get to ride with Dumbo. You know, it's not just a, you know, it's got to be themed, you know.
Right.
So even when Disney modifies what would be called an off-the-shelf attraction, it's gonna be modified and themed up and everything. So yeah.
I mean, we can talk more about it, but the Adventure Through Inner Space was another big attraction that opened where it's was where Star Tours is now. But it was the Omni Mover design that Bob Gurr, you know, designed, with the way that it moves through an attraction, but then turns you to the direction they want you to look at the certain scene or what they want you to see at that moment in the ride. And so that was, so if you're familiar with Haunted Mansion, that is
the same system.
Same system. And they're still used in other attractions besides Haunted Mansion today. Little Mermaid's another one, but so the next thing I wanted to mention was because there's a lot more to go. The Haunted Mansion opened in 1969, and that was something that was in design when Walt was still alive, but the direction of it was kind of unsure at the moment. You know, they had someone else we had on our show, we had Rolly Crump, was a part of the original designing of it, and they didn't know exactly what this was going to be and how it was going to be laid out, but there was all these different ideas, and then a lot of people were involved in it that got put into this project But the house, the mansion itself, was there when Walt was alive, but they still at that moment didn't really have the idea. I think the Omnimover for Adventure through space kind of helped with how they're going to move people through, because originally they wanted it to be a walkthrough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A walkthrough, and so not only how they were going to get people through it, but also just the tone of it. Yeah. Should it be really scary, or should it be more lighthearted? And yeah.
And Mark Davis was brought in to bring some of the humor, because he had already brought, he was an artist from Disney for many years, but was brought in by Walt to kind of make, you know, Jungle Cruise humorous a little bit, and was it the Mine Train and some other aspects of things. But so he was put into the Haunted Mansion designing that brought kind of the humor. It's always interesting, and we could talk about the Haunted Mansion again. We've done, you know, 2-3-part series on the Haunted Mansion before, but I always think of Rolly Crump and drawn a blank. Who was the one he worked with?
Well, there was Ken Anderson.
Yale Gracie and Ken Anderson. Yale
Gracie, Exotencio.
Yeah, I always think of the first half of the mansion is kind of what they kind of worked on. And then the kind of the middle
Claude
to the
Coates.
End. Claude Coates. Middle to the end was a lot of the humorous stuff with, Mark Davis. So it's kind of a mix of a bunch of different.
Well, yeah, people. Yeah. The Claude Coates was really good with environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mark Davis is really good with characters. And so it starts out with a lot of Claude Coates and morphs into a lot of Mark Davis. And, you know, Claude Coates, you said an Adventure Through Inner Space, and that was an example of much of it was environment. And then, you know,
But they were kind of, at that moment, time that Haunted Mansion was opened up, they were already kind of thinking about Walt Disney World. Well, there was thoughts of that when Walt was alive, but they were pushing it more, and it was going to be more of a Disneyland type park, but bigger and much more of a vacation destination. And that, you know, that's a whole, there's whole podcasts on just Walt Disney World. So I don't want to go too much into that, but it did end up opening, like Kenneth said, in the beginning of 1971. And his brother, Roy, was a big part of getting that going and opening. And unfortunately he, passed away just months after, it had opened.
Yeah.
But I wanted to mention about the 70s, because there's 2 attractions that opened up in the 70s that were kind of put in there for a certain clientele of people that was becoming more and more popular. Teenagers were going to places that had roller coasters, and they were kind of becoming popular. Six Flags Magic Mountain had roller coasters. By that time, I think Knott's Berry Farm did. And so Disney did, the only roller coaster at that time was the Matterhorn. And so, and this is a whole, and again, a whole nother story on how Big Thunder Mountain became, and, you know, Space Mountain. But those are the 2 attractions I'm thinking of that opened in the 70s that brought that aspect into the park that wasn't there before.
Right, right. Space Mountain opened in 1977. I think the same weekend that Star Wars premiered, which nothing to do with each other, because Disney did not have any involvement in the original Star Wars. But just quite a weekend, you know, if you think about it. Space Mountain opens up. I think Space Mountain had already opened at Walt Disney World. But
74 or something?
74,
like that.
75, something like that. I think 75. But yeah, so 1977 is Space Mountain at Disneyland, and then Big Thunder Mountain in 1979. Mm-hmm. So now they're really trying to get the thrill seekers to come in. And
yeah. That when I think of the 70s, I think of that era, that type of attraction. There was obviously other stuff like Bear Country had opened up, and you know, the Bear Country Jamboree and that whole thing we can go into. But I wanted to kind of go into another big part and someone else that had a big part of the Disney history. And that was that the Disney company was struggling by this point, and they weren't putting out the movies that they had been known to put out, the quality and what they were putting out. And it just wasn't going as well as they had hoped. And the direction wasn't really there because they had lost Walt, and there just wasn't a direction, someone to say, we got to do this. We got to, you know.
Yeah.
And the company needed that kind of person because that's what it was founded on. And so they brought in Michael Eisner from, was he Paramount?
Paramount, yeah. And Frank Wells, who had been with Warner Brothers, and I think he had left to go climb mountains, literally. But he helped bring in Michael Eisner. And then Michael Eisner took the CEO spot, and Frank Wells took the second spot, the chief operating officer. Because he didn't challenge Michael at all for that, because he didn't want to start off the relationship like that.
No.
So, but... This was new. This is the first time somebody had been brought in from the outside to run the entire company. And so for a lot of people, that was controversial. But
yeah, it was a big time.
But you're right. There really hadn't been, the direction hadn't been there. They did focus on building Epcot Center, a second theme park at Walt Disney World, which I mentioned because that, once they got that going, you know, it starts sparking the idea of, gee, maybe we can have a second theme park in Anaheim, you know? So, but at first they needed to get the company, you know, profitable.
Yeah. So keep that in mind about the second part before we, talk more about that, but just keep that in mind as we move on. But yeah, when Michael Eisner came in, he wanted to get things going right away. You know, he wanted to show, you know, progress, and wanted to start to see changes in things. So I think it all kind of, and I've heard this in a couple different interviews with Tony Baxter, but I think it all kind of came over when he and his son, Mike Weisner's son, they kind of went over to Imagineering because he didn't know anything about what they did at Imagineering, really. And then
Paramount had nothing like that. So,
right. You know. And while he was there, he was introduced to all these things they were working on. And at that time, you know, they were already talking about us. Kind of a, weren't they? Because the relationship for Star Wars with George Lucas was kind of pushed from Michael Eisner, right? Because of his relationship.
I think that helped it, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know. Was a thought there for Star Tours yet?
Well, they were tossing around various ideas on what, because, like you said, the Disney studio wasn't connecting with audiences. The big hit movies were coming from people like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. And Disney, the Disney company, I think they might have been toying with it before Michael Eisner came aboard, but they ended up, you know, coming up with the Star Tours attraction idea. And, they made it happen. I mean, Michael Eisner, you know, I don't know if any of the old school Disney people would have been willing to do it, you know, in terms of bringing, because of course Star Wars was not a Disney property at the time.
Yeah.
And to this day, there are people who are bent out of shape about that.
Yeah, it was a big deal to bring in.
Who better at Disneyland than a competitor?
Yeah.
You know, people wanted a Star Wars ride. It was a hit. They had done 3 movies at that point. They were hit, mm-hmm. big hits. So that got underway. They were able to have George Lucas work on a few other things for them, like they mm-hmm. did Captain EO with Michael Jackson.
Right.
And they deliberately, you know, they had the Captain EO movie open, and then they had like a few months before they opened up Star Tours because they wanted to give some time in between. And
right.
So Star Tours was a big hit attraction. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Big hit. And really, so you had the relationship with George Lucas off and running, which would prove fortuitous, you know. Mm-hmm. That was a key pivotal moment in the history of the company, not just Disneyland, the history of Disneyland for sure, but the entire company, yes.
Another attraction that he was introduced to then was Splash Mountain. The idea of it was there. Splash Mountain was not the name at that time.
Right, but his son really liked his son was captivated by a model for it, and, you know, mm-hmm. that helped sell the idea on doing that, and that opened up in 1989, mm-hmm. right? And that's when they first publicly started talking about expanding, because by this time, by late 89, Disney had bought the Disneyland Hotel, which Disney did not own up until the late 1980s.
Right.
Because Walt Disney's friend Jack Rather built a hotel right across the street from Disneyland. That was a friendly deal with Walt Disney, because it was like, hey, there should be a hotel here with a Disney name on it. But in order to do that, you know, they had the rights to do that. You know, Disney didn't have the rights to a Disneyland hotel in Southern California. So they had to buy that if they wanted to really move forward with plans. So they did. They bought that. And then 1989, when they opened up Splash Mountain, they've got a press conference. They say it's time to really look into expanding and then building a second theme park in Anaheim. So that kicked that off. But yeah.
Right. In Indiana Jones, Toontown. So like the 90s were a big, the 90s was probably one of the biggest just for the studios in general. Not just the theme parks, but for movies.
Well, they were having hit movies, you know.
Oh, yeah. With Little Mermaid and Aladdin and Lion King.
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, yeah. Yeah. Wow. So when, you know, Indiana Jones had come up and you had mentioned George Lucas,
mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg already, you know, and of course we know what a great attraction that is, and it's still, you know, one of the most popular attractions in the park today. And that opened in 95. So then you had Toontown that had opened in 93.
Yeah.
And then by this time, because Tomorrowland had kind of you know, we talked about 67. There had been additions to it with Space Mountain, and which kind of changed some of the way Tomorrowland looks in that corner. But until that time, there wasn't really a lot that had been changed overall. And so the new Tomorrowland opened in 1998.
A lot of that has been kind of, you know, redone since piecemeal.
Painted,
not as successful as 1967, but the thing is, by that point we were barreling towards the resort expansion,
mm-hmm.
building a second theme park, adding a brand new hotel from the ground up. Disney had also bought a hotel right next to the Zen Hotel. It was called the, it was first called the Emerald and then the Pan Pacific. So that brought the number of hotels Disney was willing to talk about that they owned to three. I think Disney kind of owned some local motels that they didn't really talk about, but three basic Disney hotels there, but only one of them actually built under Disney. And a big shopping district called Downtown Disney that kind of glues it all together. If you're a Walt Disney World person, your Disney Springs is kind of what that is, except Disney Springs is kind of standalone, whereas Downtown Disney is between it all. It's, you know, it glues the parks and the hotels together, and, you know, there's a parking structure off to the side there. But should we talk about what that second park is?
Oh yeah, we had mentioned it. So California Adventure opened in 2001, in February of 2001. And it was not as popular as they had hoped when it first opened. There was a lot of reasons for that, but budget was probably the number one thing. I think ideas was not the problem. They had plenty of ideas and good ones, but a lot of it was budget, and it's just kind of. You know, when it opened, I mentioned February, because later that year, something big happens that kind of also put a damper on
tourism and
tourism
travel
in general. Yeah. And that was 9/11 had happened in September of 2001. So we've done shows on the history of California Adventure. You can go back and find those. Yeah,
you know, they've changed a lot of it. They've added to it and expanded it, and it's a much more alluring park now than it was when it opened.
Yeah, I think the ideas were good. It was just things got cut, and when things get cut everywhere, it suffers.
Well, Disney owns Marvel now, so they have a Marvel's Avengers campus, as one of the sections. And if you're familiar with the Cars movie, they have the Cars Radiator Springs, Cars Land.
That Cars Land opened in 2012.
I think so. Yeah.
So, more than 10 years later, but I think that was one of the big things that changed it. That and the entrance on Buena Vista Street.
Yeah, they made the entrance evocative of the Hollywood that Walt Disney came to when he first came to California. That was that tie in there. Really, this is part of the effort to turn Disneyland into a vacation destination rather than just kind of a day trip. That was the main driver of building a second theme park. The entrances face each other. If you're familiar with Walt Disney World, it takes a while to get from park to park. Not at Disneyland. You go, their entrances literally face each other. You can leave one and walk straight into the other within a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
But you need to have a ticket that allows you to do that. So you can buy a ticket that only lets you in one park per day, or you can buy what's called Park Hopper, and that gets you access to both parks. You can buy. And of course, if you buy multi-day tickets, it's cheaper than just buying one day at a time,
But also I wanted to say is that they, to build the destination, a vacation destination place, they were noticing that people are going to Disneyland for one day and then they might go in somewhere else and spend their money, Universal Studios, Knott's Berry Farm, SeaWorld, these other attractions in Southern California. So they thought, well, we could get them for another day or two. It's just that much better. So Michael Eisner, you know, we spoke about was there through all this. But shortly after California Adventure opened, somewhere in a couple years after that, is when he departed the Disney company. And Bob Iger, who we know today, had taken over. And I had mentioned that the 2012 was a big year for California Adventure. There was other things that had happened along the way. But one of the big things for the studio was them purchasing Lucasfilm, which allowed them to have Star Wars finally after. And so that was what kind of came from that. Was the announcement of a new land coming to Disneyland and at Hollywood Studios in Florida, and that would be Galaxy's Edge,
which is a Star Wars land. Yeah,
and that opened in 2019, and with Rise of Resistance opening in 2020.
It was a very ambitious, you know, a lot of money, very ambitious, a lot of space. Which is why it didn't end up in Tomorrowland. They just didn't think they had the space for it there. So they actually, they took out a couple of, you know, they modified Disneyland a bit, but most of it is expansion. You know, they basically backstage area or landscaping area that had been converted into this new land. So they did take, they shortened the Rivers of America a little bit, and they took out what was called the Big Thunder Ranch.
The train was kind of rerouted.
The train track was rerouted. That thing's been rerouted a lot over the years, you know.
Yeah.
Again, it's the train is one of the reasons the park's even there in the first place. But yeah, so Galaxy's Edge was a huge expansion of the guest areas for Disneyland. That's another thing. They call the customers your guests, or that's Disney parlance for their customers. That doesn't mean you get in without paying. You still got to pay a lot to get in, but you're a guest.
We could do a whole episode on just the lingo of that.
The lingo, yeah.
The cast member. Also want to mention, I was thinking about it as I was looking at this list, is, you know, I started the podcast around the time just before Cars Land had opened and all that. So if you go back and you listen to the episodes from about that time to now, especially some of the current events, you know, we talk about when Galaxy's Edge was announced, and we have our thoughts on things. And so it's kind of interesting, you know, if you go back and listen to some of this and the way it was being built and how excited we were for this and that, and the details, small details would come out each week or every so often. We chronicle that whole thing.
I mean, this wasn't planned, but I wanted to squeeze in here.
Yeah.
And say, if you've never been, or it's been a long time since you've gone to Disneyland, and now you're thinking, geez, I really should go see the place, contact Lynn. Lynn did not put me up to this, but, you know, he can answer your questions, because I'm sure if you haven't been in a long time, or if you've never been, you probably have a lot of questions about, you know, how much it costs and what to do and all that stuff. And just contact Lynn. And he'll walk you through all of that.
Yeah, it costs nothing extra to do that. I did want to mention that shortly after Rise of Resistance opened in 2020, just two months later, the parks would close.
Everything was locked down.
Right, for two weeks.
2 weeks.
Though it ended up being almost 2 years, so
we hadn't mentioned it yet, but Disneyland by this time, you know, in the 1980s, Disneyland said, we're going to be open every day of the year,
right?
We're going to be open, you know. So there's a lot of amusement parks in the country that are seasonal. Disneyland is 365 days per year, both theme parks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they came about from Michael Eisner also.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that they were, it was closed for, was like 18 months or something. And
it was quite a while. It was longer than the ones at Walt Disney World. That was true. Yeah.
And we podcasted right through it.
And, we sure did.
So you can go back and listen
to those. What did we talk about? No. Well, because, I mean, we do talk about, we alternate between current, now we do, but we alternate between current events, you know, what's happening now, and the other episodes are usually a topical or historical. So, you know, we go into the history of something, or we explain, you know, an element of what's there now or what mm-hmm. used to be there. So, but we used to have, those two things used to be done in one episode. So I don't know how we would have done current events as its own episode back when during the lockdowns, you know.
the show was getting long, and it felt like we were being rushed for the main topic because our current events would go 45 minutes sometimes. And and then we put the main topic on top of that. The shows were like 2+ hours sometimes.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a long time for someone to, you know, listen. So, yeah, I'm glad we divided that up a little bit.
Me too.
So a few other things happened and that I wanted to mention. So shortly after that, Toontown was re-freshened up a little bit, changed slightly. There was a new attraction that opened, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, which was opened just before, I believe it was before the closures, at Hollywood Studios. And
which is a park at Walt Disney World. Yeah.
Right. So this opened just this year, 2023. And I think it's a great addition. I love the attraction. I think it's going to be one that I want to go on almost every time I go.
And it's an expansion of the guest footprint again.
It is.
All these years later, they're still willing to expand the guest footprint, which I think is a good sign. There was a time where the people in charge of the park didn't really want to do that. They wanted, if you were going to put something new in, it had to replace something old. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's a good sign that they're willing to these days they're willing to actually expand the park.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And then just months ago, we had the closure of an attraction we had mentioned earlier in our history, and that was Splash Mountain, which will be rethemed.
It's being rethemed as we speak.
Yes.
It'll open up as a different attraction.
Next year, I believe.
That's the plan, based on elements from the Princess and the Frog movie.
Right.
One of Disney's movies. So, things are continuing, and that's if you subscribe or follow whatever, so you always get our new episodes. You'll keep up to date on all of it.
Yeah. So we ended right here, but we'll continue as things happen. On our show, I did want to say one thing about this, and this kind of this idea was sparked from the fact that we no longer have our friend Jim Corcus here, and I thought, I wanted to keep doing history in the show. It's kind of what the show was founded on was Disneyland history. That was something that really sparked my interest. And if you go back, you'll see that we've had like whole episodes dedicated to one attraction and the history of that. And we go very deep into those. And we still have a couple attractions we haven't hit yet that we need to do. I just been putting off the research because they're pretty, one of them's a couple are pretty big attractions. I did want to mention that, Jim Corcus, who had, passed away recently, was really big into Disneyland history, obviously, and had, a lot of books and everything. But he would come on our show often. You can go back and listen to those. But I just really enjoyed those episodes because it kind of took us back to the history that this was kind of founded on. And I wanted to do this episode kind of a little bit in like a dedication to him, and that we're still keeping the history and passing it on alive. And we hope that we can still continue to do that in the future. So I wanted to wrap it up here and say that, like I said, we're still continuing to bring you Disneyland history, and we will do that. But we also love talking to former cast members and Imagineers and authors and people that still have the love for Disneyland that we do. Wow, I know there's a lot of stuff we missed, but I think that we hit a lot of the key points in the history.
Yeah, I it's a nice overview. I hope it gives people a better understanding of what's going on, and if they want to know more, you know, they could always check out our website, thesweetspot.com. We've got links to other websites, and you know, there's a lot of good websites and books out there that kind of fill you in if you've got questions. And you can always send your questions to us too. Maybe we'll answer them. So
yeah, if you follow me on Instagram, make you just search The Sweet Spot or Lynn Barron, you'll find me there. But I've been featuring books from my collection. I have quite a big, especially Disneyland, collection of books, and I've been trying to feature those on there. I'll kind of mention, you know, take a picture of the cover or sometimes a couple of the pages inside, mention the title and the author, and I've had a lot of people respond in the way of, oh, now I got to add that to my collection, you know. So so yeah, check that out. Also, I think that's on, I also posted on our group. If you are on Facebook, go to The Sweet Spot. We have a group page, and we put a lot of announcements and things on there also. Like Ken had mentioned, there's a lot of websites out there. There's Yesterday Land. Yesterland? Yesterland? Is that right? Yesterland.
Well, Yesterland. That's a great website. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Mice Chad's always doing, you know, things with Disneyland history. And if you like, you want to hear some of the attractions, Disney Chris has a great website of lots of audio from attractions all the way up to now, to all the way back to the openings of the parks. You can go over there and check those out and listen to those on his website. But yeah, if you have questions or want more places to read or listen, I have some other podcasts I suggest too, but you can just email us with any questions at thesweetspot@gmail.com. That's thesweetspot@gmail.com. I think that does it, Ken. I wanted to mention one other thing. I did not plan for this, so give me one second. We usually at this point, we usually read any reviews if we have any.
Yeah, so leave reviews while you find it, while you look for it. I'll say leave a review for us, especially if you can do it at Apple Podcasts or iTunes. That's where we're mostly going to check. It really helps. It helps people find the podcast. So that's a way that you could do it for free, is just leave us a review. Or if you listen to us at some other location, leave a review there. But yeah, you can also leave it at an Apple Podcasts. We would just let people know what you think of the podcast, and that just helps people who are interested find us.
We don't have a new one this week, but
then I'm going to just keep talking until we get one. No, I'm just kidding.
yeah, leave one, and I'd love to read it next time in this spot of the podcast. So thank you all so much for listening. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk with you next time.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.